about it now. So let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more.
This is the Quality News Network. Despite conflicting reports, an Iraqi judge says Saddam Hussein will be executed within hours. He says the government is consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of a religious festival. The former dictator's lawyers originally said he had been transferred from U.S. custody, but Iraqi officials say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow Hussein's execution. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, quote, "Our forces stay at a constant state of high readiness in Iraq, and I would expect through this period they would do the same," end quote. The White House declined to comment on the timing of Saddam's execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush says he needs more time to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. He says he'll continue to meet with policymakers and will address the nation within the first few days of January. Four sailors on the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul fell overboard today as the submarine was getting underway from an English port, the military said. The four were retrieved by fellow crew members and British authorities. Two were pronounced dead at the hospital, and the other two were treated for minor injuries. In other world news today, in Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister formally took control of the battle-scarred capital for the first time since his government was formed nearly 2 years ago. Ali Mohamed Gedi promised thousands of cheering Somalis peace and stability, saying, quote, "Today is the beginning of a new life, new stabilization, and a new future for Somalia," end quote. In Jerusalem, an Israeli human rights group said today Israeli security forces killed three times as many Palestinians in 2006 than the year before. 141 children were in that annual death toll of 660. In Saudi Arabia, more than 2 million Muslims stood on Mount Arafat today to pray for peace. Security is tight for this year's Hajj. Officials are trying to avoid the kind of stampede that killed 400 pilgrims last year. In Colorado, the governor has declared a state of emergency and the National Guard is on standby. The state is still digging out of last week's storm, and a new blizzard has begun dumping 2 more feet of snow overnight. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, A Conversation with America, designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distant guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Conservationists are petitioning the government to add the North Pacific right whale to the endangered species list. It is the rarest whale in the world and is nearly extinct. In the U.S., the right whale is found only in Alaskan waters. British scientists say they will soon introduce a flu vaccine that's effective against all major strains of the disease, including the avian flu. The researchers say that the inoculations will provide protection for several years, even without boosters. For hundreds of thousands of minimum wage workers around the country, the new year brings a raise. 7 states, Arizona, California, Delaware, Massachusetts, New York, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, are raising their minimum wage. The federal minimum is currently $5.15 an hour. The new wages will go as high as $7.50 an hour. New federal anti-pollution rules go into effect Monday. Better fuels and cleaner diesel engines in new trucks and school buses are expected to reduce emissions by 98%. The new engines will be more expensive, and some trucking companies claim they will be burdened with higher fuel and maintenance costs. 14,000 striking workers at Goodyear Tire and Rubber have voted to accept a three-year contract. The agreement closes a Texas factory but provides a billion-dollar health plan for retirees. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.05 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 40 points at 12,461. The NASDAQ is down 10 points at 2415. And the S&P 500 is down 7 at 1418. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Christine
Kent. This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board. 11,
right.
11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Night Shift, where the children of the night fight the radical right. It's Foxed Up with John Fox. Foxed Up is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream every day. Be one louder by calling 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-443-2366. And now, your host, the ranting, headbanging hippie, John Fox.
G'day, g'day, everybody. It's Saturday here in Australia. It's probably Friday afternoon, Friday evening where you are, and we're heading into the New Year's weekend, so we're finally wrapping up this ultra crappy, violent, disgusting year, and hopefully we can, you know, go through this whole process we do every year, hoping and praying that the next year is going to be better, and we're going to change directions. And I've got a little something that we're going to do today regarding that very thing, looking back on the future. Welcome aboard Foxed Up, everybody. It's the last show for the year. I still can't believe just that this year is past. I mean, it just, you know, we this network, all kinds of things have just seem to have made it just fly by, and I don't know if you're the same as myself, but does it seem as you get older that the years get shorter? You know, you remember when you were a kid, and you know you're 10 years old and you get done with the Christmas, and next Christmas just seems to be, you know, it's in another lifetime. And then just kind of it all seems to accelerate. And I've always had a theory about this, since time is relative, that 1 year, how it feels, is relative to how many you've lived. And hence why people, as they get older, say that time seems to fly by. So that's always been my theory, you know. So when you're 10 years old, 1 year has only been one-tenth of your life. So it's a huge portion that you have to get through again. But when you're 50, 1 year is 2% of your life. So it's a much shorter kind of thing. But anyway, that's my hypothesis, and I'm sticking to it. I've got this big thing, but I might save that for kind of second half of the show, and I won't get through it all, because it's fairly long, and then I hope you all will go and read it yourselves. But we'll get there later. Let's see. Right at the end of the show yesterday, when I was mentioning these Phoenix motor cars, these fully electric vehicles that can be charged with their special charger for 130 miles range in 10 minutes flat. And the pickup truck that they have can hit speeds of 95 miles an hour with 5 passengers and the full payload. And I thought this was pretty cool, you know? I mean, and not only that, you can just plug the thing straight into your 240 outlet or your 220 outlet over there in the States where your clothes dryer is plugged in, and it can trickle charge overnight. And I just think that this is, you know, this is where we got to go. This is, there's no question. And in a related article, right towards the end of the show yesterday, Gene sent me a couple of things regarding more on electric vehicles. Now, one of the things was asking whether or not the power grid could handle all these electric vehicles. So via treehugger.com, there's an interesting little piece here saying we love PHEVs, which is plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. And it says, from the Pacific Northeast National Laboratories, if all cars and light trucks in the nation, talking about the United States, switched from oil to electrons, idle capacity in the existing electric power system could generate most of the electricity consumed by plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. A new study for the Department of Energy finds that off-peak electricity production and transmission capacity could fuel 84% of the country's 220 million vehicles if there are plugged-in hybrid electrics. Because PHEVs are expected to cost about $6,000 to $10,000 more than existing vehicles, mostly due to the cost of batteries, researchers evaluated how long it might take owners to break even on fuel costs. Depending on the price of gas and the cost of electricity, estimates range from 5 to 8 years. But the current lifespan of the about the current lifespan of a battery, if this idea took hold, utilities could end up promoting PHEVs as powerfully as do oil companies when they argue against CAFE standards. Its expression would be a patriotic meme, a plug-in, a security of a green future. And I'm really, really, you know, just, I think that this is fantastic stuff. But the thing that really blew me away, that, and thank you, Gene, for this, I would have completely missed this, and it's at a site called askprice.com, and I believe I sent this link to the ninjas to post on the show post for today, is about TNT Trucking. And I don't remember if TNT is in the States, but they are the largest trucking and logistics firm in Europe and also here in Australia. And this I find just absolutely fantastic, and I'll try and get to this through this before the break. TNT Express, in partnership with Smith Electric Vehicles, unveiled the world's largest high-performance zero-emission electric vehicle earlier this month. And now the company is conducting a feasibility study to assess the viability of introducing a 7.5-ton battery-driven lorry, known as a truck to some of you in America, in the other European capitals. The Newton truck, designed and built by Smith Electric Vehicles, is the first ever in its class that can compete with its diesel equivalent, but without the polluting effects of controlled, i.e. nitrogen oxide and particulate matter, and CO2 emissions. It also is virtually silent, causing negligible noise pollution. Peter Baker, TNT Chief Executive Officer, said, "We're committed to significantly reducing controlled and CO2 emissions from the TNT fleet, not just in the UK, but across mainland Europe. We are looking at the viability of introducing these groundbreaking zero-emission vehicles in other major European cities, a move that will further consolidate our position at the top of the Green League in the transportation sector." Representatives from TNT vehicle manufacturer Smith Electronic Vehicles and leading international environmental and engineering consultants DHV are presently assessing the economic and environmental case for escalating the use of the green vehicle. TNT is already considering buying 200 of the Newton trucks for its fleet, subject to a successful pilot scheme currently running in London. The zero-emissions vehicle is exempt from London's congestion charge, approximately 1,750 pounds a year, incurs no road tax, and is battery-driven. It costs just 25 pounds a week to recharge the battery, as opposed to 110 pence on fuel for a diesel vehicle. The gentleman from Smith Electric Vehicle said, "Our vehicles make both economic and environmental sense for urban use. I'm liking this." So, I mean, this is where we got to go. And if you know, obviously TNT has been thinking very far ahead, because if they're that's okay, Agnes, you can crush on Spock all you like. Don't worry about that, folks. That's side thing. But anyway, obviously TNT realizes that to keep themselves in business in the future, they need to make moves to get off of the petrol and diesel teat. That simple. All right, folks, we're up on our first break and running a little over. We're going to come back with our track of the day, something for ringing in the new year. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. I am John Fox, coming to you from Sydney, Australia, and we'll see you right after this break.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project, because they believe and what they're doing, and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes, because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Anderson. Ah, I love Rose Tattoo. Just a great Australian band. And talk about a guy who has in his later life completely lived not up to his stage name. Angry Anderson is the lead singer of that band that just was playing there. And Angry has become one of the most amazing nice guys that no one realized except for people in the industry, you know. I mean, shaved head, bad teeth, full body tattoos, the whole thing, singing songs like Bad Boy for Love, and you know, over the last few years, he's just become so involved with kids. And from what I understand at the moment, the guy is ranking up all kinds of donations and funds to build a massive, massive community youth center. And it's just really, really funny that, you know, Angry Anderson, the guy fighting for the little guy. I don't know. There's something kind of fun about that. before we get to our track of the day, what am I doing? Oh, right. That's what I'm doing. If you were listening to the show yesterday, Sarge rang in and mentioned that over at unreportednews.net they have a new columnist called Cowgirl, and I suggest you go to unreportednews.net, and you can just over there in the left-hand column there's a link to Cowgirl's blog, and she's doing environmental stuff. She's got a great piece on the Wonder Crop hemp. And I would suggest going and having a read, because it just opens saying, "Hemp, yay, we won. Big oil, cotton lobby, and all the corporations can't stop us now. The journey always starts with that first baby step." She just starts out saying, "Legalizing hemp, that can be the first baby step to all the other steps along the way, if we the people have the courage to take them. Hemp can go a long way to providing us with a new manufacturing base to replace some of the ones we have lost. Hemp can be a huge start to solving the problems with sustainable agriculture. Hemp can help us provide for fuels to all but replace the fossil fuels, oil-based fuels we now use to travel and run our day-to-day lives. And that may just be the beginning, depending on if and when we are ready to take a stand against those who have turned this, our great country, from the can-do country of the past to the can't-do country of today. All these issues more and the chance to also go a long way to save our environment. What can we ask for?" She's got a bunch of links talking, just kind of linking to the folks that in North Dakota who has re-legalized the production of hemp. Now, she does a great job in explaining the difference between hemp and marijuana, okay, and discusses why it is currently illegal, dealing with DuPont, the paper companies, you know, a few other things. And kind of goes back into the history of how hemp was like the biggest cash crop in the United States for ages. Because of its usefulness for, you know, paper, wood, rope, oil, food. And so I would definitely suggest going to unreportednews.net and having a read of this piece. And the piece that she wrote yesterday on the disconnect, our connections to the environment and the food we eat, just absolutely, absolutely is so spot on. And is very much along the lines of things I've been saying for a long, long time, that one of the key issues with the environment that we got to deal with is the way that we're farming and where our food comes from. And yes, Agnes, so right. Hemp makes some of the best fabric that you'll ever come across. And I can tell you, you know, I'm a jeans and T-shirt kind of guy, and I've got this really, really nice long-sleeved hemp shirt that my lovely partner gave me, geez, gotta be 5 years ago. And I'm telling you, the thing has not lost a thread. It has not lost any of its color. It breathes better than anything I own, and I swear to you, I must wear that thing once a week. Because, one, it's really comfortable, and two, even though it's long-sleeved, I can go out in the morning, and it's enough to cover and keep my upper body warm, but as things warm up, it breathes better, and I'm not sweating my bejesus off. And, you know, it's not so disposable, and when you're making clothing out of it, when you bleach it, and the same thing with paper, it doesn't need heavy chemicals, and there isn't the chemical runoff which pollutes our water systems, and it just goes on and on and on and on. So I would go buy Cowgirl's column. It's just really, really good stuff. Anyway, the track of the day, there's nothing really to explain about this. I was looking for something, being that it was the last show for the year, and I woke up this morning, first thing in my head was Steely Dan ringing in the ears. So without further ado, being that this is the last show of the year, before we start a new one, which hopefully will be better, we'll get out of this stupid war, maybe, we hope, but just for no other reason than I think it fits, Steely Dan, ringing in the ears.
out of time. The trip we made to Hollywood is etched upon my mind. After all the things we've done and seen, you find in the dark, man, the things you think are useless, I can't understand. Are you reeling in the ease? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the keys? Have you had enough of mine?
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Silent, knowing, always in time. See how this love stays divine.
All right, everybody, welcome back. See how You're here with John Fox out of Sydney, Australia. Oh, man, the Tea Party. Ah, just the sound of that man's voice just goes right up your spine. It's just, oh, it's an awesome thing, and I swear it's the only rock band I've ever known that if I'd play it at a sound check when first firing up the PA, if there were women anywhere involved with the crew or whatever, instant belly dancing. It's just, I don't know why, it just happens. Okay, John's going to attempt a bit of a reading. And we're going to see how much of this we get through. This is a really, really neat piece that came out a few days ago. Actually, it's over a week old, but I think it's perfect for the final show of the year. From truthout.org, you can look for a piece called The Age of Mammals by Rebecca Solnitz. And I think this is a reprint from tomdispatch.com. Now, for those of you that are familiar with David Rovix, whose music closes out Bruce Birch's show, his song After the Revolution, which is an exercise in what if, you know, somewhere down the line in the future. And very, very similar vibe on this piece. It's someone looking back in 2025 at the first quarter of the 21st century. Looking back on the first quarter of the 21st, and the first section is The View from the Grass. I've been writing the year-end other news summary from Tom Dispatch since 2004. Somewhere around 2017, however, the formula for digging up overlooked stories and grounds for hope grew weary. So for this year, we've decided instead to look back on the last 25 years of the 21st century. But it was creatures from 60 million years ago who reminded me how to do it. The other day, I borrowed some kids to go gawk at me at the one thing that can always count on in an ever more unstable world, Age of Dinosaur dioramas in science museums. This one had the usual dramatic clash between Tyrannosaurus rex and Triceratops, pterodactyls soaring through the air, one with a small reptile and its toothy maw, and some oblivious grazing by what? When I was younger in another millennium, we would have called a brontosaurus. Easy to overlook in the drama was a shrew-like mammal perched on a reed or thick blade of grass, too small to serve even as an enticing pterodactyl snack. The next thing coming down the line always looks like that mammal at the beginning. That's what I told the kids. Inconsequential beside the point, the official point usually being the Clash of the Titans. That's exactly why mainstream journalists spent the first decade of the century debating the meaning of the obvious binaries, the Democrats versus the Republicans, McWorld versus Global Jihad. Much as political debate in the early 1770s might have focused on whether the French or English monarch would have supremacy in North America, not long before the former was beheaded and the latter evicted, the monarchs in all their splashy scale were the dinosaurs of the day, and the 18th century mammal no one noticed at the first was named Revolution. The early 21st century version might have been called localism, or maybe anarchism, or even civil society regnant. In some strange way, it turned out the windmill builders were more important than the U.S. Senate. They were certainly better preparing for the future, anyway. The mammal clinging to the stalk had crawled up from the grassroots where the choices were so much more basic and significant than, for instance, the one between fundamentalism and consumerism that was on everyone's lips in the years of the young George Bush. If the 20th century was the age of dinosaurs, of General Motors and the Soviet Union, of McDonald's, globalized entertainment networks, and information superhighways, the 21st has increasingly turned out to be the age of the small. You can see it in the countless local economy projects, wind power stations, farmers markets, local environmental organizations, food co-ops, that were already proliferating, hardly noticed by the time of the Saudi oil wars swept the whole Middle East, damaging major oil fields and bringing on the great gasoline crisis of 2009. That was the one that didn't just send prices skyrocketing, but actually becalmed the globe-roaming container ships with their great steel boxloads of bottled water, sweatshop garments, and other gratuitous commodities. The resulting food crisis of the early years of the second decade of the century, which laid big petroleum-style farming low, suddenly elevated the status of peasant immigrants from what was then called the undeveloped world, particularly Mexico and Southeast Asia,
They taught the less agriculturally skilled in suddenly greening North American cities to cultivate the victory gardens that mitigated the widespread famines then beginning to sweep the planet. It also turned out that the unwieldy and decadent SUVs of the millennium made great ecological sense, but only if you parked them facing south, put in sunroofs, and used the high-windowed structures as seed starter greenhouses. The crisis spelled an end to the epidemic of American obesity, both by cutting calories and obliging so many Americans to actually move around on foot and bike and their hands. And it goes on, the second section, Bush, the accidental empire slayer. This is where it gets really fun. For a brief period in the early years of that second decade of this chaotic century, a whole school of conspiracy theorists gained popularity by suggesting that Bush the Younger was actually the puppet of a left-wing plot to dismantle the global hyperpower of the moment. They pointed to the Trotskyite origins of the neoconservatives, whose mad dreams had so clearly sunk the American empire in Iraq and Afghanistan as part of their proof. They claimed that Bush's advisors consciously plotted to devastate the world's most powerful military on the planet, near collapse even before it was torn apart by the unexpected officer movement, which burst into existence in 2009, followed by next year's anti-draft riots in New York and elsewhere. The Bush administration's mismanagement of the U.S. economy, while debt piled up, so obviously spelled the end of the era of American prosperity and power that some explanation, no matter how absurd, was called for, and for a while embraced. The long view from our own moment makes it clearer that Bush was simply one of the last dinosaurs of the imperial era, doing a remarkably efficient job of dragging down what was already doomed. If you're like most historians of our quarter-century moment, then you're less interested in the obvious why it fell than discovering the earliest hints of the mammalian alternatives springing up so vigorously with so little attention in those years. Without benefit of conspiracy, what Bush the Younger really prompted, however blindly, was the beginning of decentralization policy in the North American states. During the 8 years of his tenure, dissident locales started to develop what later will become full-fledged independent policies on everything from queer rights and the environment to foreign relations and the notorious USA Patriot Act. For example, as early as 2004 to 2007, several states, led by California, began setting their own automobile emission standard to address already evident effects of climate change so studiously ignored by Washington. In June of 2005, mayors from cities across the nation unanimously agreed to join the Kyoto Protocol limiting climate-changing emissions, a direct rejection of national policy. At a national meeting in Seattle, librarians across the country publicly refused to comply with the USA Patriot Act, and small towns nationwide condemned the measure in the years before. Many of the towns also condemned what historians now call the U.S.-Iraq quagmire. It was the bullying of the Bush administration that pushed these small entities to fight back, to form local administrations and set local regulations, to leave the republic behind as they joined the journey to a viable future. And when their withdrawal was finished, so was the republic. Now, the thousands of tons of high-level radioactive waste that pro-nuclear reactor Washington policies had brought into being are buried in the granitic bedrock underlying the former capital, known as the nuclear Arlington, in contrast with the human Arlington to the south, which will receive the remains of a few more nostalgic officers from the Gulf Wars, then close for good. The whole history of armament, radioactive contamination, disarmament, and alternative energy research is on display in the museum housed in the former Supreme Court building, though many avoid the area for fear of radiation contamination. In hindsight, all we see that the left-right divide so harped upon in the era was but another dinosaur binary. After all, small government had long been, at least theoretically, a conservative mantra, as was, at least theoretically, left-wing support for the most localized forms of people power. And yet neither group ever pictured government or people power truly getting small enough to exist as it does today. And its most gigantic and bioregional groups, about the size of the former states of Oregon and Georgia, but of course deeply enmeshed in a complex global webs of alliances. All this was unimagined in, for instance, the dismal year of 2006. By the time the Republican Party itself split in 2012, Its two adversarial wings, dubbed the Fundament Party and the Conservatives, the American Empire was dismantling itself. Of course, the United States still nominally exists. Will pay a bow to its year at the Decolonization Day fireworks on July 4th, but is largely a symbolic entity, like the British royal family was for a century before its delusion in 2020. A similar death of the dinosaurs moment was in work in the mainstream media. The big newspapers and television networks of that era, during the early years of the century, as Bush the Younger dragged the country deeper into the mire of unwinnable wars and countless lies, most of the big newspapers and television news programs lost their nerve, their edge, or even their eyesight, and failed dismally to report the stories that mattered. Some fell to scandal. The New York Times was never the same after the Judith Miller crisis of 2005. Some were sabotaged from without, like the Los Angeles Times, undercut by its parent corporation, cost-cutting programs. Some withered away as younger readers fled paper pages for the internet, but behind them, below them, in their shadow, regarded as puny and insignificant back then, even though their scopes kept ups and prodding the print media, were bloggers, alternative media such as small magazines and websites. The glorious indie media movement, progressive radio, even the text messaging had helped organize the first great Latino march of the immigrant rights movement at the beginnings in April 2006. And we're going to take a real quick break, and I'm going to come back and read another section. This thing's huge. I've only gotten through a quarter of it. So we're going to just take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to skip down a bit because there's a bit more about Bush that I just absolutely love. So we'll see you straight after this. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head-On Radio Network, and we'll have a little bit more on flashing on the future. I don't know. But anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Nobody knows you.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head-On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head-On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at
the Head-On Radio Network.
Now get back to work.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others, reach out, and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. I'm reading this piece from truthout.org on mammalism. But anyway, this is as though someone in 2025 looking back on the first quarter of this new century. And there are many different sections to this. They talk about the Latin American Renaissance and some other things. But there's a section towards the end called The Principles of Change, and I just think that this is fantastic. It says, a mature oak tree always looks significant, and when we look at it, we're willing to respect acorns. But the rest of the time, the seeds of the next big thing are just trodden upon and overlooked. The ideas that made our era and pulled us back from the brink, the stakes that went through the hearts of the dinosaurs and the more incremental forces that rendered them extinct, were all at work in the 1990s. They just didn't look very impressive yet, and people were intimidated by the heft of those dinosaurs and swayed by their arguments. The World Court and related human rights, environmental rights, and criminal courts became more powerful presences as the sun set on the era of nation-states. Multiple changes often combined into scenarios impossible to foresee. For example, the belated U.S. recognition in 2011 that the International Criminal Court did indeed have war crimes jurisdiction over Americans coincided with the worldwide anti-incarceration movement. This explains why, for example, former President Bush the Younger, extradited from Paris and found guilty in 2013, was never imprisoned, but sentenced to spend the rest of his life working in a Fallujah diaper laundry. People who are still bitter about his reign are bitter, too, that the webcams there suggests, even at his advanced age, he still enjoys his work that accords so well with his skill set. His assets, along with those of his vice president and Halliburton, Bechtel, Exxon, and the other war profiteers, were famously awarded to the Vietnamese Buddhist Commission for the Iraqi Transition. After almost a decade of the bitterest bloodshed, Iraq, too, had broken into five nations. But by this time, so many nation-states were reorganized into more coherent units that the Iraqi Transition, led by the Women's Alliance of Islamic Feminists, nicknamed Islamo-Feminists, was surprisingly peaceful when it finally came. As I've said many times, the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. Said the sci-fi novelist William Gibson in 1999, in retrospect, the arrival of the age of mammals should have been easy to foresee. On every front, family structure and marriage, transportation, energy and food economies, localized power structures, everyday life was being reinvented in the late 20th century and early 21st centuries. From India to Indiana, an interlocking set of news began to emerge and coalesce, becoming in the end the new common sense that new generations of thinkers and activists were guided by. Who now thinks it's radical to advocate the decentralization is better than consolidated power, that capitalism's worldview is vicious and dishonest, that the public matters as much or more than the private, that enforced homogeneity is not a virtue either on a farm or in society. And just the vision of George W. Bush working in a diaper laundry. Oh, wow, it's just too much fun. There's a link to this piece on today's show post at headonradionetwork.com, I've only read about a third of it, and I really suggest that you go and read it, because it's an interesting theoretical roadmap, and there's a lot of truth in this, that, you know, we've already planted the seeds for the great change. And the oak tree analogy is so very true. You know, we've been, those of us who, you know, were either right on things like renewable energy and social consciousness, and those of us that woke up to it in the later years like myself, you know, we know we're right. And eventually, everybody else is going to catch up because they're not going to have a choice. And I think it's really interesting, the idea of the death of the nation state. And I've heard this talked about in other circles as well, that the way the globe is divided and organized just really doesn't kind of work. And this whole local thing, you know, I think Sarge and I were talking about it yesterday. You know, people on their own, without going and you know, making official boycotts on the major grocery store chains or you know, anything like that, they are on their own, going to their, waiting till Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning, going to their local farmer's market. Not buying their meat and produce from the chains who abuse farmers and set false price ceilings and all this kind of nonsense, where, you know, we have a better connection to our planet, the food we eat. I mean, this has got to be one of the biggest issues. And that crap that came out yesterday about the fact that, you know, no special labeling for cloned animals used for food is a bunch of crap. Because you know, and it was proven in the UK, when genetically modified foods, as in fruits and vegetables and whatnot, entered into the UK, the public wouldn't buy it. It had to be labeled, and they couldn't sell it. And this idea that no special labeling is needed is just a way to take choice away from the people. And I think that's just shocking. But it's also a sign of where we're at the moment. So, you know, I really, really hope as we wrap up 2006, which unfortunately has been another just awful year for this planet of ours, you know, and it seems like, you know, every year we think that it's going to be better next year, and I have to go with that same kind of thought process, or else, you know, none of us could go on. None of us could go on dealing with, you know, outside forces running our lives. You know, I really like to know what I'm eating. I know it seems really simple, but I really like to know what I'm eating. And, you know, what can I say? Continue to shop locally. Get to know your local producers. I think that this is so important. And supporting your local producers. And you know, it's funny, I might pay a little bit more in the end, but for some reason, I'm not feeling the effects. I'm getting better nutrition because the food's real. Things last longer. And I did an A/B test not long ago. I grabbed an organic tomato, and I grabbed manufactured tomato, you know, and I let them both sit in the fridge. The organic one lasted twice as long as the factory farmed one. You tell me what that means. All right, folks, we're running out of time. And yes, Agnes, and it tastes so, so, so much better. I'm telling you. Try your bloody favorite breakfast cereal with some unhomogenized whole organic milk, and it's a whole new thing for breakfast. All right, everybody, have a great New Year's. You know, survive your hangovers, the whole thing. And for the final time this year, thank you to the Mid-Atlantic Council of Carpenters for all their support that they give this network. Thank you to my producer, Agnes, and my sometimes producer, Bob Kincaid, who, you know, constantly just do a wonderful job producing this program for me. Thank you to our mods and our bloggers who keep things on the website just happening, and the research that Treble and the News Ninja send to us, you just can't beat it with a stick, I'm telling you. And Peter Godbold, love you, mate. You're super. And to all my mates here at the Horn, Bob, Bruce, Guy, Mark, Joe, Dr. Bill, love you. Have a great 2007, and we'll see you next year. Be good, be green, see ya.
You make a grown man cry. Cry. You make a grown man cry. Cry. You make a grown man cry. Cry.
About the oil, the gasoline, I ride smooth, she's a clean machine.
So I started up.
Well, start again, then what do you got?
I can't compete
with the rising
energy. Even rough it up.
Rough it up.
Hey, if you like it, you can slide it up. Come on, slide it up now.
grown man cry.
Cry.
Don't make a grown man cry.
Cry.
Don't make a grown man cry.
Cry.
My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy. She's a mean machine.
Quality News Network. Former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, sentenced to death for his role in 148 killings in 1982, could have his sentence carried out either today or tomorrow. A U.S. military officer who spoke on condition of anonymity says that Saddam will be hanged before the start of the Eid religious holiday, which begins this weekend. The Iraqi government says it is consulting Muslim clerics about the appropriateness of executing Saddam at the beginning of the religious festival. They say he is still in the hands of American guards and will remain there until just before the execution. The Pentagon says that U.S. forces in Iraq are prepared for any violence that may follow Hussein's execution. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman says, quote, our forces stay at a constant state of high readiness in Iraq, end quote. The White House declined to comment on the timing of Saddam's execution. President Bush will expand U.S. forces in Iraq by 17 to 20,000 more troops, according to Pentagon officials. Most of the forces would be stationed in or around Baghdad. In Crawford, Texas, President Bush and First Lady Laura Bush were moved to an armored vehicle on their ranch today during a tornado weather alert. Bush is in Texas meeting with top aides and policymakers to come up with a new strategy for the war in Iraq. In Mogadishu, Somalia's prime minister entered the capital today, a day after an Islamic movement's fighters retreated ahead of his Ethiopian-backed troops. He was welcomed by thousands of cheering, waving, applauding residents of the city. Although his visit is meant to symbolize